Welcome to the Integration Podcast, your guide to enterprise integration.
One of the things that I've been quite interested in learning a little about is this thing about IoT, where it all fits in. And coming from an enterprise integration perspective, it's not something that we have done that much. So I'm quite fortunate to have Mrinal joining me to share a little about his knowledge about IoT. I think he has been doing pretty much of it. I think it will be some interesting perspective. So Mrinal, would you please tell a little about yourself and where you're coming from?
Sure. Hey, Daniel. Thank you for having me. My name is Mrinal Wadhwa. I work for a company called Fiber, which is a IoT platform company that originated in the smart city space, but now does a whole host of applications around low-power wireless IoT devices. And my role at the company is I'm CTO, and I led the development of this platform and the various applications we've built and deployed on this platform over the last few years.
I think one of the first things is could you tell a little about this Fiber platform? Because I think it makes a lot of sense for the companies about what really is involved in IoT, because when you start thinking about IoT, it's like we got all of these things that need to be connected. And how do we do that? I think you have a pretty good answer to some of those things.
Fiber's platform is oriented towards... So IoT is very broad term, right? It covers, from thermostats in your house to industrial machines to infrastructure. So it's a very broad term. At Fiber, we're focused on devices that are really small computers. They don't have access to power typically, so they're either battery operated or solar, which is charging a small battery. So they're very, very tiny computers, battery operated, low power devices, and they're wireless. So they can be then installed in remote or difficult to reach locations. So for example, one of the first devices Fiber started with was a parking sensor. It's a wireless device, looks like a disc, kind of like an ice hockey puck. About that size, which we would drill a hole in a parking space on street and embed the device in it. And once it's installed, it's almost invisible. It's kind of flush with the surface of the device. And it can, for surface of the road, and what it can do is detect cars arriving and departing from an individual parking space. This is one example, but we've done a whole host of devices like that, from devices that enable smart parking to smart lighting management to smart traffic monitoring in cities, sewer and storm drain monitoring, monitoring of flooding in different cities, air quality and weather-related use cases. And then we've gone on to do more than smart city use cases as well. Even though we started in smart cities, we've worked on, for example, some smart agriculture use cases, helping customers reduce the amount of water they use during irrigation. And we're also starting to approach some industrial scenarios as well. And so to do all of these use cases, what you realize is that there are a lot of similar components involved. You typically need some kind of an edge device, that is this low power device. You need a low power wireless a network that can receive data from these edge devices wirelessly over some kind of radio protocol. This wireless network typically will then use a typical internet-connected setup to deliver data to servers. This connectivity can come over cell networks, it can come over Wi-Fi, Ethernet, or even in the 5G realm, some of the new protocols that are emerging in 5G as well are very interesting from those kinds of devices.
So, So you're starting with the edge device, which is, as you said, a small computer, and then you can attach different sensors and do some programming around what it should do with these sensors, right?
Right. So typically at Fiber, what we've done is built a hardware module that we call the Fiber Link. This Fiber Link is a small little 1-inch by 1-inch board that has a microprocessor on it. It has radio connectivity on it, and it has open pins that speak most standard hardware protocols like I2C, UART, etc. So you can take off-the-shelf sensors like a temperature sensor or a magnetometer or a switch and connect it to this Fiber Link, and what you get is an edge device that's capable of doing something. You then, of course, have to write the business logic into it and program it. But the benefit of a Fiber Link is that it takes away the headache of assembling the whole device from scratch and trying to figure out how to do power management correctly, how to do radio communication correctly so that it's secure and power efficient. How do you scale a radio network? All of these concerns go away because you're not starting from scratch. You're starting from a module that's been proven in large deployments. Like, for example, we've done over 12,000 devices in San Francisco City and several other cities. So we've shown large deployments. We can handle large deployments.
Okay, so we start with Fiber Link, and then, for instance, this 12,000, I would imagine it's parking or something like that in San Francisco. Right. You'd have one parking house with... Would you then, for each, I don't know, 200 or 10 devices, have like a gateway that these devices are connecting to?
So we were doing this on street. So these were the streets, the street side parking spaces. And so we were spread around several hundred blocks around the city. And typically we would have a gateway, which was, you know, every two or three blocks, at the intersection of every two or three blocks. This is not typical. So there's an alternative approach possible as well, where some vendors are trying to do citywide deployments where you're only doing really powerful, expensive gateways, but only doing three or four of them throughout the city. So, for example, Sigfox has done a lot of implementations in Europe with that approach, especially France. And our belief at Fiber is that a dense network made up of cheap gateways is better than a network made up of really expensive but few gateways, because you get a lot of redundant paths in your network if you are doing a dense implementation, which means that you have hundreds of gateways rather than two or three gateways. So we found that for mission critical applications, that's a better setup.
And I guess with the price of putting a SIM card in one of these things, it's not that big of a deal.
That's correct, right? So if you design these gateways correctly, they should only cost a few hundred dollars, and they then you can deploy them very, very frequently. This makes your day. See, the whole point of IoT implementations is get me a piece of information as soon as it happens and do a reliable job of sending that information to me, right? That's the whole point. And if you've got a network that isn't very reliable because it can be affected by noise or it can be affected by physical obstructions, then the whole utility of the system falls apart. So you want a reliable, low latency, power efficient network. And in our experience, the only way to do that is to do that with dense deployment of gateways.
All right. So then you got the gateways you got in San Francisco, I don't know, 100, 500 of these gateways. They're then connecting to a server
where
they're sending all these, and users can see which parking spots it's available or whatever.
Yes, right. So the gateways will typically, in San Francisco's case, we're using the cell network, and they would then deliver the data over the internet to Fiber servers. Fiber server system is called Fiber Engine. It's a distributed system to handle large number of these devices. And on the server, we have a representative of every physical device on the server side. So we call them, when I was designing this approach, I called them device actors, basically an actor that represents a physical device on the server side. And these are concurrent entities. So kind of like very, very lightweight OS processes, but we do this in a programming language called Erlang, so it allows us to do lots of them, millions of them. So these actors can then collaborate with each other, right? So you can apply business logic where you can say, okay, if a car arrives in this parking space, then turn the street light on. That's a very simple example, but you can imagine all sorts of complex scenarios where, for example, let's say the traffic on some part of the city is affecting the lights on another part down the highway, for example, or flood detected on some part of the city is affecting routing algorithms or traffic lights in other parts of the city. So these kinds of systems become possible. Analyst firms like Gartner have since given a better name to those device actors. They call them digital twins now. But that term didn't exist when I was first sort of trying to figure this out.
And the digital twin is just like a place that acts in the server and has the same kind of methods and can do the same thing.
Right. So it's kind of like the thing that happens with a lot of these IoT devices is that, one, they're not always connected to you, right? Because it takes power to continuously stream messages, right? And so they only send you messages when something interesting is happening in the physical world, right?
So a car has arrived. Parking, you only want to know when it's there and when it's not.
When it's arrived and when it's departed. When it's there, I can derive, right? From the arrive and departure events, arrival and departure events. So this device only sends me a message when a car either arrives or departs. The rest of the time, the device is kind of sleeping. Its radio is off, and every few milliseconds, it comes up and does a quick check. Is there a car? Is there a car? Is there a car? And if there's nothing, it goes back to sleep. So the server side digital twin allows us to talk to the device without the device actually being there, right? It's a shadow representative.
So you can query, does this parking spot have a car on or not?
Exactly, right? Okay. And
so it's like a state machine for...
That's exactly what it is. It's a state machine of the device on the server side, but it's a concurrent entity, and you can do interesting things with it. So, for example, one of the things we did with this is... I'll give a specific example. So San Francisco has trains that go in the middle of the road, right? We're also deployed in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. has a subway that goes underneath our deployment in Washington, D.C., right? Now, our parking sensors are based on magnetometers, so they detect changes in magnetic fields, right? So when a car arrives, it affects the magnetic field around the sensor, and hence the sensor says, okay, this may be a car. Now, what happens when you have a big train that goes from the middle of the road, you see that every sensor on that road almost sequentially thinks a car has arrived, right? You get the sequential triggers. And at an individual sensor level, you don't have enough signal to say this is not a car, it's a train. But as a group, that whole street of sensors could make that decision if you apply the right algorithms to it, right? However, we figured out, okay, we need these devices to be collaborating with each other. But if you try to do this collaboration in the physical world, then you have to do radio communication between all of these devices all the time.
So each device needs to say, hey, did you also see that?
Exactly. And that's a lot of power use for no reason at all, right? So instead, what we do is we're a star-shaped network, which means that all devices just deliver something when they think something interesting has happened, right? But on the server side, these state machines that represent each of the devices, they are free to collaborate. So the whole street of devices can collaborate and say, okay, we all saw a sequential trigger of events. This is not a car, it's a train, and let's ignore it, right? So those kinds of scenarios become possible when you have this this digital twin notion in place. So Fiber Engine enables those digital twins. It enables the security lifecycle management of all of the devices. It enables maintenance events. It enables even business logic. So continuing our parking example, you could have a set of rules that apply to each parking space. So for example, it could say that from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., this parking space is a $2 parking space, $2 an hour parking space. That's a business rule, right? And or it could say that from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., this parking lane is a traffic lane, right? This is all another kind of business rule, right?
So if someone stops there, we want to send someone out to send them a ticket.
That's one a possible business rule. Another possible business rule is I don't want my sensors to waste power during this period because they're going to continuously see cars, right? So they're all variations possible, right? Different cities want different things. But if somebody's parked in front of, let's say, an emergency exit, you want to immediately dispatch a police officer to go see what that person's doing over there, right? Another thing cities want to do is they want to improve their rate of capturing violations. So there are two goals of a smart parking system. One is make it easy for citizens to find parking. And the second one is make it easy for city enforcement officers to do a better job at enforcing the parking rules so that everybody is following the parking rules, which leads to safety and improved incentives in the system, right? So, for example, Washington, D.C. is using our system to do what's called dynamic pricing of parking spaces. The idea is that they want to price up the parking space up until a point where there's always some parking spaces that are free at all times because the price is high and most people say, okay, I'll take public transport instead of driving to the city because parking is expensive right now or toll is expensive right now, right? So to create that incentive, if they were doing a bad job of capturing violators of parking, people would just not pay for parking, right? And so then that breaks the system down. So they need to improve this capturing of parking tickets. And the current rates at which most cities capture parking tickets are really, really bad. For most cities in US, it's around 2% of parking violations are actually captured. So by improving that rate, you can improve compliance in the system and hopefully make the system work, right? But my overall example was that these are all kinds of sort of business rules that you want to apply on top of this network of devices, right? And so the fiber system enables that application. And some of these business rules live on the server side. Other business rules live on the device side, right? And the fiber system also helps you decide when to push a business rule out to the edge so that the devices, you know, for example, go to sleep between certain time to certain time, right? And there are a lot of challenges in doing that. This may lead us to, you know, some of the other use cases. But one of the biggest challenges in IoT is this idea of over-the-air updates. So I have a new business rule that I would like to run at the edge, right? And so I need to send this code from my server to the edge devices.
And I guess this business rules is written in, it's not, is it C or is it some Python?
It could be anything, right? Okay. But with really tiny devices, at the end of the day, you want C, right? Okay. Because it's power efficient. But
you just want to say shut down and do these things. You don't need to write the whole code or...
Exactly, right? So we want to make it easy. But there's a fundamental problem. The problem is that if you push code to edge devices all the time and you have, let's say, 50,000 edge devices, If you make a mistake in that code, you could permanent, and this mistake causes the device to stop communicating back to you. You now have 50,000 devices spread around the city, embedded in the road, that you have no way of reaching. And so now you've got a big, massive capital investment in actually going and digging them out and fixing them. That's a very risky scenario, right? So one of the things Fiber has done uniquely in the market is that we built a very, very tiny virtual machine that lives inside our fiber links. And because it's a virtual machine and its instruction set is completely independent of the underlying hardware instruction set, it's a sandbox. And we can push business logic into that sandbox without the risk of the entire device crashing or the communication layer crashing, right? And that was a big win for us, because what it does for us is that not only can we push business logic to the edge, when let's say somebody says from time A to time B shut down, but we can also push machine learning logic or machine learning decision models to the edge as well, and allow algorithms to do it, because we now have a safe sandbox for that environment, right? That enables lots of interesting things. So I'll give another parking example, but the challenge with magnetometer-based sensing is that the magnetic environment of every sensor is different. So one sensor may have a rebar underneath it. Another sensor may have a manhole cover needed. And all of these things accumulate magnetism. So you now have 50,000 devices around the city that have different configuration a little bit, right? You have to configure their baselines just a little bit differently. So you can't potentially do that manually, right? You need learning algorithms to learn those baselines.
Secondly, so how baselines much,
change all the time,
how much
right?
magnetism power or whatever is does it, means that a car has left, or it's not just a bicycle that has been parked here.
Exactly. And so you kind of have to learn the baseline values, and you have to learn the thresholds, and do that independently for each device. So you need machine learning, and we realized this very, very quickly, to be accurate. But you also have this risk of over-the-air updates being incredibly risky. So to solve that problem, we had to build that virtual machine. But once we did that, it became very, very easy for us to allow algorithms on our server side that are doing this machine learning to take the models, give it to the digital twin, and the digital twin delivers it to the edge device with completely automatically without manual intervention, right? So this allows for a learning edge computing type of system, which I learned has applications across a whole bunch of use cases, right? So we used it in parking, but I'll give a completely different example in agriculture, for example, right? So in agriculture, one of the things we did recently is we automated the irrigation system of a plum farm. They're the biggest producers of plums in the world. And they're based in California. And they had two issues. One issue was that California has been in drought for several years, even though it got better last year with some rain. But it has a history of drought, and they know that there'll be drought again. And so the water in the San Joaquin Valley, where this farm is located, is getting expensive. And this farm spends a lot of money, $1 million plus each year, on buying water. So they want to reduce the amount of water they use and optimize the amount of water they use, which is great for the environment as well if farmers go in that direction, right? Secondly, the other issue they have is that they, in 2016, they lost $2 million worth of fruit because on 2 days in the summer, it was too hot for a few hours. And the heat affected the skin of the fruit. And because the skin was changed, Costco, which is one of their big buyers, said, we will not take truckloads of the fruit. And so they lost $2 million in the process, right? So they're heavily affected by these sudden weather events, which are unpredictable. So to solve the problem, what we did is we deployed on the same stack of fiber link gateways and fiber engine, we built a brand new system for this particular use case. where we had a set of soil moisture sensors, which were detecting in real time how much moisture is being absorbed by the soil at multiple depths. And then on the other hand, we built a remote control, a wireless control of their irrigation system. So we could control their pumps, we could control their drip lines in terms of how much water was being released into a particular block of the field. So what this does is, now on one hand, you know how much water is being absorbed. On the other hand, you know how much water you're releasing. And you know that a particular type of soil only holds a certain amount of water. So clay will hold, for example, 30% moisture, right? Beyond that, there's no point watering clay because the water will just run off. So now you can very easily build an algorithm which balances this picture, right? And it monitors how much water is being absorbed. It knows the soil type, and it says at 30%, stop putting water into block B of the field, right? So that creates this autonomous algorithm. Of course, there are other factors. So for example, one of the things the plum farm does is that in certain times of the year, they stress the plant. So what happens is, if you give the plant a little bit less water than it needs, the plant thinks it's dying, and so it pushes all the nutrients to the fruit. And so the fruit becomes better, right? So this is knowledge, this is business logic, if you will, right? That is embedded into that farmer's experience. And they shared that with us, and we were able to build it into this learning.
So now the farmer is just sitting back and enjoying?
Oh, yeah, well, no, there are a lot more complexities. What they're trying to do is optimize their use of resources. They're heavily constrained in terms of manpower, in terms of money, in terms of time. And they're trying to improve their use of resources. They're very happy with it. What they do now is, we integrated that system with Alexa, Amazon Alexa. And so what they can do is say, sit in the office and say, turn on water in block B, and it just happens. Okay. So that's kind of cool. But that's the power of sort of system integration, right? We didn't have to build any of that. Yeah. We just built control, and then we got Alexa to integrate in a day, and you know, we were all set from there on. So my larger point was, across applications, you realize that to be a efficient IoT system, you need to be you need a system that's capable of machine learning and edge computing at the same time. And so you need to combine a whole host of technologies to successfully execute a valuable IoT system. And that's sort of what we tried to build at Fiber.
All right, cool. So yeah, and we talked about, you got your own server, and then obviously coming from the SAP world, there's also, SAP Leonardo, IoT, and where does that fit into this frame?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So a lot of the technology platform vendors, if you will, if you want to put them in a bucket, right, have made these IoT platform layers. Typically, they are software-only layers. So SAP Leonardo IoT is a software, sort of like in some ways, it's a rebranded data integration system, right? What it does is, it consumes data from a whole host of devices, and it funnels that data up to a whole host of business services, right? That's what it does. And that's very traditional data integration, you know, many-to-many integration scenario, right? The benefit of, and SAP has Leonardo IoT, IBM has Watson IoT, Amazon has their Amazon IoT stack, Azure has one as well. So all of these players, what they've done is, they've built these higher level server only IoT integration systems, essentially.
So all of these servers would need like a gateway that connects with all the edge devices, or edge devices that can connect directly to these.
Exactly. And the problem is not just that they will need the hardware. The bigger issue is that they cannot potentially be as intimate with the edge device as let's say fiber could be, right? So Because fiber
because you know the full stack and you know what are the devices there are and how to update them.
Exactly, right? So, for example, this whole scenario of remote updates, most of the IoT server platforms provide this ability as well, but they don't actually know how to deliver the update all the way to this remote edge device, right? They can send it over a TCP channel, but beyond TCP, when it comes to this low-power wireless network, they will not know how to actually deliver the update, right? Similarly, they would not have any notion of this virtual machine that I talked about. So since they don't have that, they run the same risk of what if I make a mistake in my software update and everything just stops talking back to me, right? So they can't possibly solve these kinds of problems. So what has happened in case of fiber scenario is that we're heavily integrating with all the big IoT platform vendors. So we have integrations with Leonardo IoT. We have an integration with Watson IoT. We have an integration with Amazon IoT and Azure IoT. We are very tightly integrated into HPE's Universal IoT platform as well. So
why would you do that? Because you got your full stack and you got all the things that you can run on it. What benefit do they provide?
So that's a fantastic question. So because, see, so fiber is not trying to be your business system, right? Most of the value from IoT, I think, will come from integrating physical world events with business processes, right? And improving the business process because of the physical world event. And in some cases, using the business process to trigger some kind of instruction to the physical world, right? So let's take a more concrete example. Let's say in a city, a sensor detects that a street light is about to fail, right? So fiber has a device which measures the power consumption of a street light. And if the power consumption starts to drop, we can tell that the street light, either the bulb has already failed or is likely to fail very, very quickly, right? So we've detected that a bulb is about to fail. However, that piece of information in itself isn't as useful as it could be when it is combined with business context. So let's walk through that scenario. So, okay, a bulb is about to fail. The city management needs to trigger a maintenance process, they need to find somebody who can go fix the bulb. They need to find the inventory, look at inventory and see who has stock. Do we have stock for that replacement bulb? In which warehouse do we have that, all of that stock? Do we need to order more stock? Which technician is the right technician to go to that location? How do I route that technician so that he's not going there just for that one bulb, but he's going there to do 10 different tasks on his route? All of these are business context dependent problems that the fiber system isn't a specialist in, right? Businesses have a large amount of this business content and business knowledge that lives traditionally in enterprise systems like SAP. And so I think that the end value is in making sure that the repair of this particular asset is done in the most business efficient way that ensures quality of service for the end customer. So the street is never dark, but at the same time balances it out with the availability of resources within an enterprise, right? And so all of that, SAP systems are fantastic at doing. And so I think that by integrating these two systems together, we can deliver the maximum amount of value while making sure that this piece of information is reliable and secure, which is the value that fiber provides in terms of providing that integration.
Mm. So all the way from the streetlight that fails, and the IoT platform would then detect it fails, and this platform would then trigger a message to SAP saying, hey, or you create a separate integration that says, do something around the streetlight, it failed.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And I think all of that will still live in traditional business systems. And it could be, so another, if you do the opposite direction example, another example could be there, the price of electricity is going to be really high. Or let's say they know from the utilities that they are part of, right? Let's say in particular case, then utilities have started to create these APIs, which can tell you in real time their pricing and availability of power, et cetera, right? So let's say an SAP system learns that power is going to be scarce from this period to this period. What one of the devices could do is dim down streetlights on certain streets where there's no traffic, right?
You would need to connect both the devices in the road together with the streetlights.
Exactly. And you would need this instruction to flow from an SAP system, right? So while Fiber or a system like Fiber can do a great job of managing the on-off status of the streetlight or combining that information with traffic sensors on a street, that would be the ideal scenario, but it would be naive for me to think that it is going to be Fiber everywhere, right? So there's going to be integrations at all layers in these IoT systems. But I think you get better security, better accuracy, and better power efficiency if you've got a tightly integrated IoT stack versus a cobbled together IoT stack, right, from multiple vendors. So that's where I think Fiber's advantage really is. But the business systems will still be in charge of the business logic and the business processes. Fiber is just the reliable interface to the physical world. Another interesting, to your question about how does SAP IoT or Amazon IoT play into the whole conversation, right? Fiber system specializes in low power wireless devices, but that's not the only kind of IoT devices. You may have powered IoT devices. You may have big, massive machines like manufacturing machines, which are also technically IoT devices, right? You may have cameras, which are streaming a lot of data. These are variations of IoT devices. And so I think that the SAP Leonardo IoT is very well positioned to bring all of that data together in one place and make it available in a standard way to all other SAP-based systems.
And enable users to get the different user interfaces on top of this.
Exactly. And sort of bring all of that information together, right? So from that perspective, also these platform plays are interesting because they bring together a whole host of different types of devices and use cases.
And I guess then it starts adding a lot more value.
That's correct, yes.
So, yeah, I guess one more question. So I think a lot of people have been doing, at least in the enterprise world, have done a lot of machine IT. Is this any different, this IoT world?
Yes, it is, right? So it's primarily different because the resource constraints are different, right? So, for example, in typically machine connectivity, you have access to line power. So you're never thinking about how do I optimize my power use so that this particular device that's based on a tiny little battery can survive inside the road on a street for 10 years, right? That's a very difficult problem to optimize for. And most of the time in a machine connectivity setting using, say, traditional sort of SCADA type of setups, you don't necessarily bother about that, right? So it's a completely different kind of constraint. Secondly, typically the number of sensors in traditional machines is very small compared to the number of devices we're talking about in the IoT realm, right? To extrapolate on our whole discussion where we've been talking about parking, San Francisco has 200,000 plus parking spaces. So we only did 10,000, right? So, or 12,000. So if every city in US was to do a parking sensor in every parking space in the cities, we're talking millions of parking sensors and then millions of streetlights. millions of sewer and storm drain sensors. I didn't tell you about this, but one of the devices we've done is a device that goes under a manhole cover and can detect level of sewage and rate of flow of sewage, which is interesting in detecting blockages and maintenance inside the sewer system, which is very difficult. We're also using the same device for flood monitoring, et cetera. So again, if this really plays out as everybody's hoping it will play out, IoT will mean millions and millions or hundreds of millions of devices. And I think the projected number runs in billions, but it's a different scale, right? So it's a different scale problem. So those challenges are different. And then finally, some of the security challenges are drastically different as well, right? So a machine inside a manufacturing plant is very well guarded, right? It has got, it's very difficult for an unauthorized entity to reach the machine and tamper with it, right? However, fiber sensors, for example, are installed on the street, and anybody at any time could sit and spend 20 hours tampering with it. Nobody would ask a question, right? They could take it out. They could take it home. None of that will protect their device, right? So the security constraints are very, very different. To understand the complexity of this problem, I'll illustrate the challenge, right? So almost anything in computer science that does an authentication, you expect that thing to keep a secret, right? You go to a website and you say, I have a password and hence it is me, right? Similarly, these IoT devices have to keep a secret, some kind of sort of encryption key saying, hey, I have this key, hence it is me, trust what I say, tell you, right? And let me connect to the data. The problem is this certificates or keys of some kind, right? And so you put them in these devices, then you put the device on the street, which means that anybody could tamper with the device and take out the key, right? Because at the end of the day, everything you store in some kind of computer memory is electricity, right? So you can study that electricity. And you can, if you're motivated enough, you can figure out that key. Doesn't matter what a hardware manufacturer will tell you in terms of this is cryptographically secure memory or whatever. None of that is true. At the end of the day, it's electricity. So you can figure it out, you know. So if a device cannot keep a secret, how do you ensure that you can trust anything that device says? Because you can't be sure it is that device. It could be anybody, right, who stole that key. So how, that's a completely different challenge from I've got a fence and a wall and a 100 guards making sure nobody gets into my factory, right? So, and the way Fiber has handled it is by carefully managing the life cycle of every key. So we track that every device actually has a unique key. So even if you take one parking sensor out and you tamper with, you steal the key, all you get is this key for that one parking sensor, not hundreds of parking sensors, right? You're not starting to fool the system, right? And even if you try to pretend to be that parking sensor, we do a whole bunch of checks around the protocol and we do anomaly detection to try to detect that this may not be the device that, right? Exactly. So by doing those kinds of things, we can try to do security. But to your earlier point about, the server-only IoT platforms have no knowledge of when a key was programmed into a particular device. They have no knowledge of the life cycle of the key. They can't ensure. So if you're trying to cobble together a system where the manufacturer of the hardware device was different from the vendor of your server system, then I challenge you to figure out a auditable trail of keys and certificates written to every individual device. Can you give me a trail that says every device actually has a unique key? And that becomes very difficult to do given the way the industry is currently set up. And so that's kind of the thing we were trying to solve with that tightly integrated stack.
Interesting. Yes, that's definitely some different aspects of this. There's definitely a lot of things that this brought up, and a lot of things I've learned from this. What this full digital twin is, and why these new platforms does have or server platform have a meaning. So anything you want to round off with?
No, I greatly enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for having me. And I think it's a big, challenging world around IoT at the moment. There are a lot of unsolved problems, and it's very, very new. Nobody has done large-scale deployments. That 12,000 sensor deployment remains one of the largest deployments of sensors in any city in the world, right? There's tremendous opportunity in this space. There's tremendous possibility of combining a traditional SAP functional and technical knowledge with this space and building some really valuable applications. I hope we'll see more of that, and I hope we'll see more interactions around it and conversations around it.
Cool. Yes, thanks for joining and sharing all of your wisdom. So if you like this episode, you can find more at integrationpodcast.com, where you can sign up and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening.